Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Mark Baser just strolled into the studios of WGN Radio. You know him as a frequent guest here, a funny commentator on things, and the host of his talk show at the Hideout. How are you, Mark Baser?
I'm well. How are you? Happy New Year.
Literally, as you were walking in, this story is crossed.
Yeah.
So Burke
I'll
is
leave.
Being, ah, it's all right. What do you have to say about this, Mark? You're a Chicago.
Well, I don't know the story.
You know everything I know now. He's 37-page indictment. They say he was shaking people down.
We're used to this.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that...
Insert politician's name here.
Yeah. I don't know. You'd like to think that there's a new breed of aldermen and alderwomen coming who don't play by these rules.
The Tribune says the criminal charge was jaw-dropping, even for a city with a long history of public corruption. While dozens of his city council colleagues have been convicted and sent to prison over the decades because nobody reads the newspaper or has a very good memory. That was me. Burke was largely seen as too clever or sophisticated to be caught. He'd faced federal scrutiny several times before, but always escaped the charges. Turned 75 last week. Often decides Chicago's most important issues. Controls millions in campaign funds. The sole steward of the city's $100 million workers' compensation program. He's also married. His wife, Justice Ann Burke, was quietly sworn in to a second 10-year term on November 29th, the same day her husband's City Hall and 14th Ward offices were raided. I remember that. I didn't remember that that coincided with her being sworn in for 10 more years on the state Supreme Court. And she's lovely and smart, and I've talked to her a couple of times, and everything I've read about her, I've always liked.
She does a lot with the Special Olympics, right?
That's why she was in here, talking about the big one they had here, the anniversary celebration. So that's where that story is. Golly, when are we going to learn? When are we going to learn? How are you, Mark Baser?
I'm great. I'm better than him.
Yeah, no kidding. So if you had a bad day, it just got that much better. It's coming up on your show.
Yeah, two things. We got, it's back on the TV.
Yeah, Channel 11.
So thanks for letting me plug that.
Wait, Channel 2?
Channel 11.
Channel 11?
Yeah, what's Channel 2?
It's the PBS affiliate in Minneapolis.
It was where I grew up, too, in Boston. So I was like, wait a minute, where do I live now?
The PBS affiliate in the Twin Cities is Channel 2.
Or you can watch CBS if you want.
Yeah, really. Crack that, and then you've really got some dough coming
there you
in,
go.
Buddy boy.
Yeah.
So you're on Channel 11 starting when?
The 10th. So a week from, just next Thursday, right?
So is this a video of the past
year's
filmed
stuff
worth
over,
of shows?
Yeah, we filmed stuff over the last year. And I'm excited. It's great. We have Michael Wilbon from Pardon the Interruption on ESPN, longtime Chicago journalist, too, is on.
And great Chicago fan. Did you know, I saw this in the paper the other day, what was Northwestern's football record for the 4 years that Wilbon went to Northwestern?
Did they win a game?
They were 5-41. Or 4-43 or something like that. But they won like 3, 4, 5 games, and they lost all the rest of the games. They averaged one win or less per year for the 4 years he was at Northwestern.
And I bet he was at every victory, though. I bet he was at every loss,
Oh, he
too.
Probably was. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah. So you interviewed Wilbon on one of your stage shows
great.
At the Hideout.
Yeah, he was great.
You're videotaping that for Channel 11.
We filmed it already. So the secret there is because obviously it's a different ball game than here, where you're talking about what's going on right now. And so we have to talk about things that could happen anytime.
That will be fresh on the tree. Like,
yeah,
you couldn't even be talking about the Cubs' victory if you did it in the summer.
What we do is we film multiple outcomes. We spent 9 hours talking to Michael Wilbon about every possible outcome.
The Cubs
outcome.
Won an extra innings? Go. The Cubs lost a heartbreaker. The Cubs got blown out. Now give me your thoughts.
It's an editing job, I'll tell you. Something with Cam you're talking about, his life story, it actually challenges me to not deal with the present, to deal with things that are about his life and about things like that. So I like that. The challenge is like when you have somebody talking politics, especially now because everything happens so quickly.
Well, remember in 2016, I was your guest.
You were on, right.
And just before the election. And you said, okay, but don't
I think
remember.
I said, just use the subjunctive tense or something like that. And it kind of worked.
I don't even know what that is, but I know what
either.
You mean. But yeah, the point was whatever we said had to play on either side of November, not knowing what was going to happen.
That's right. That's right. And good thing we did, because at that point, nobody thought that what happened would happen.
The whole vibe was Hillary was going to win.
Yeah, and somehow we edited it so the vibe was...
we didn't. Neutral.
Yeah.
But we knew Trump was going to win. That would have been really good editing.
Yeah, so I've gotten better. I've gotten better at understanding, A, not to talk about things like that, and also to just talk about people's stories, talk about people's lives.
So on your show at The Hideout, you do a monologue, and then you have two, three, four guests.
Yeah.
You have three or four guests,
usually. Three or
usually.
Four, yeah.
Often it's an entertainment thing, like a rapper, a musician,
yeah.
A comedian. Do you include those on the Channel 11 takes?
Yeah, so the first episode has Will Bond, and then it has a jazz musician who's you should have on. He's wonderful. His name is Micaiah McCraven. He lives here. He's a Chicago guy, and his album ended up being on a lot of best of the year lists, not just jazz, but just music in general.
What does he play? What kind
of
jazz?
He plays drums,
yeah.
But he does this really interesting thing where for his recordings, he'll record a bunch of shows, and then he'll take those live recordings and edit them and splice them together to remove the stuff about Trump. to do it exactly what I do. No, he splices them together and makes new compositions out of those live recordings.
Well, he's accompanied by other musicians.
Yeah, for sure. So he came on and we talked, and then the end of the show is his performance.
Wow.
So, and it's good.
What else you got on this show?
So that's that episode next week.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
it's Will Bond and the drummer.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You spend a lot of time with Will Bond.
Well, what we do is it's a half hour. So when you go to my show, it lasts for 9 hours, and then we cut it down to...
It's, what are you, 70 minutes or 90 minutes?
It's 90 minutes.
90
yeah.
minutes.
And so tomorrow, Friday? Yeah, tomorrow we have a live show, which we're not filming. So if you want to see it, you got to be there to see it.
Are tickets still available?
Yeah, there's some tickets left.
Who's going to be at the Hideout this time?
So tomorrow's a little bit different, because tomorrow, I don't know if you've been following at all, if you've discussed it on your show, but there's this whole... I don't know if it's controversy, but there's a possibility that the Hideout won't be around forever. And the reason for that is this big project that's going on at Lincoln Yards, where they're talking about building a number of entertainment venues, and they're talking about... It used to be the area, for those who don't know, used to be where they kept the city's garbage trucks, and the Department of Fleet Management was there, and policemen and firemen could fill up their gas there. And then right behind the Hideout... kind of is where the Finkel steel mill used to be. So this is for people who know where the Home Depot is over by North and Elston. We're talking about that area.
It's a lot of land.
It's a lot of land, and something needs to happen with it. I mean, nobody's arguing that it doesn't. But there's a company called Sterling Bay that is very powerful in the city, and they bought a lot of the land up in the area. They did not buy the Hideout. The Hideout is not for sale. But they want to develop the land into just a place where people, new condos, kind of create a neighborhood, but kind of out of... kind of thin air kind of thing.
Well, but how does that hurt the Hideout?
Well, it's one of the things on the table is that they would put five or so entertainment venues, including a concert hall of 100 that fits 100 people, which is kind of
totally
like the Hideout.
Off, yeah.
And it would all be run by Live Nation, and Live Nation is the biggest game.
Good. Well, they need...
Yeah.
God, let's help them.
Huh? Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not editorializing here, but that's... And then they're also... I'll do that tomorrow. I'll editorialize. But they're also putting in they want to put in a soccer stadium because the Chicago Fire have done so well. And
you're pulling my leg there?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they want to put
in a Chicago stadium. Doesn't the Chicago Fire have a place to play at the
I don't think it's for the Fire. I think it's, I don't know, it's unknown. It's unclear.
Seems to me like they've got a place to play.
They do have a place, and it's actually a fun place to
go. That's what I thought.
And then there's talk of, and then condos and everything like that. So, I don't know. Could the Hideout coexist with everything that's going on there? Yeah, maybe.
Classic kind of gentrification conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird gentrification conversation because gentrification normally involves a neighborhood of people being pushed out. There are no people in this area. So it's a little, like, one of the odd charms of the Hideout, because I know you've been there, is that it kind of belonged to everybody because it belonged to nobody.
Nobody. Well, that's the first time I was there. I said, Mark, you know there's sanitation trucks here, right? I mean, you almost share a parking lot with sanitation trucks.
I mean,
trucks.
Absolutely. Our backdrop, we made a picture of the truck. And it was kind of sad when the trucks left.
well, For Christmas, my son got a book, like 111 places you need to see in Chicago. One of them is The Hideout.
For sure.
And it talks about what a classic place that has been, not just as a hall, not just as a club, but sort of the vibe, the sort of purpose of that place is to embrace creative thoughts. I was thinking of you when I actually read something that maybe is written on the wall or it's their mission statement, as well as music. I suppose there are other places like that in Chicago, but this one's in the book as a classic Chicago, you know, rooted venue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously very biased, but I don't think there's a place like it. And just like other places, there's no place like those other places. I think, you know, the city makes progress, and that's, I'm not against that, and I don't think anybody at the Hideout's against that, but it's... Okay. Anyway, so the point is, tomorrow on our show, we have a number of people who do regular shows like me at the Hideout who are the guests. So we have Mick Dumke, who writes for ProPublica, and Ben Jarofsky, who writes for The Reader, of course.
Well, they do shows. Yeah,
they do a monthly podcast. Political talk show at the Hideout. Then we have Jen Sabella and Erica Wozniak, who's running for alderman. And they host a show called The Girl Talk at the Hideout. It's another talk show at the Hideout. Claire Zulke and Steve Delahoyd, who host a kind of a humor show, which Zorn has been on, called Funny Haha, which is great. And then a musician named Owen Ashworth, who plays there all the time as well. So we're kind of celebrating the Hideout and raising our arms and
in protest.
Defiance, yeah.
Attica.
There you go.
Mark Baser's in the studio. You can watch his shows on Channel 11. So what's the schedule if people want to tune you in on TV?
TV, we're switching times, which I think is a good thing. We're going to be on Thursdays at 10 p.m. with repeats on Sundays at 10:30 p.m.
Okay.
And then repeats at probably 4 a.m. on another day.
Thursdays and Sundays.
That's good, right?
Late
at night.
Those are
good times.
10:30.
It's a talk show, so it feels right.
And it's on stage. It's very, very good. Mark, it's the A-listers that are in town are coming through town. And he always has a great conversation with him. They edit them down to 30-minute shows, and it feels...
The season's great, I got to tell you. I mean, I know that's...
Who else are you looking forward to that we're going to see this run?
We have Rebecca Mackay, who wrote a novel that was up for the National Book Award. It was one of the finalists. We have Gillian Flynn, who wrote Widows and Gone Girl, of course.
Had the movie come out when you interviewed her?
It hadn't, but that's a good example where I'm glad I didn't talk to her too much about the movie.
Because, why?
Well, I actually didn't talk to her at all about the movie because it was just good talking, having a conversation.
Fair enough, right? Every other interview afterwards is going to be about that.
Nothing would have been special about that.
It's a good movie, though.
I haven't seen it yet. Don't tell her.
Gillian. Mark didn't see it. Well, we saw it on Thanksgiving. You know, my family always goes to one special movie on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
And then we go to Lowry's. You know that's our tradition.
Yeah.
So every year it's, what's the movie we're going to see? What's the big breakout movie that starts the holiday season on Thanksgiving? This year we went to see Widows.
That's good. I just watched Boss Baby over and over again. With
Boss
my
Baby?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Just sit there and watch it.
Well, here's my review of it. So the four of us sat there. We rate things on a scale of 1 to 23 jujubes at my house.
Yeah, sure.
And Griff got out, and he was feeling good about it. He goes, that was a home run. That was a 22.
Wow.
And Brenda was like, oh, my God, that movie was so great.
Yeah.
And when I was sitting there, I thought, oh, no, what's happening? This movie is not I'm okay with it, but I'm not sure if everybody else is going to have – been happy that we were here at this movie.
So you wanted to please others. You liked it or you didn't like it.
It's funny. I was a little tortured. I was trying to enjoy the movie, but I was always sorry. I was also sorry that maybe my family wasn't, if they had just elbowed me and go, having the time of my life, I would have gone, oh, okay, good. Now I can watch it independent of my worry.
Every movie should stop in the middle so people can have that conversation.
I was talking to with Elif about this a little bit, and Violetta, Sarah, a colleague of ours who read like 60 books this year.
Wow.
She was sharing with us the list of books she read.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll share it on my Facebook page. It's on hers. Well, she said one of the books that she didn't enjoy so much was one that producer Elif had suggested, which felt like a little bit of a slight.
Because it becomes your book when you recommend it.
It's like when you used to go to Blockbuster and bring a movie home for everybody, and if that wasn't a great movie, you really felt some ownership, which is preposterous. You didn't make the movie.
Well, the converse is that if they do like it, you feel like you created it. So you don't have to actually do much work.
The same when you suggest a restaurant that nobody likes.
Right.
Oh, it's the worst.
Right.
And then you're like, well, now I can't enjoy this, and I'm hungry.
Did I by the way, Sarah's just strolled into the producer bay over there. Did I misrepresent? Sarah, just walk around the glass here. Just come on into the studio.
What book was it?
Well, now maybe it wasn't. Sarah, did I misrepresent you there? Just that one's fine. Go ahead.
What book of Elif's did you hate?
I didn't hate it. You know some books are easier to get into than others.
Right.
Sure.
I was expecting to just dive right into it.
What was the book?
Snow Falling on Cedars.
Oh, it's a classic.
It's a great book.
And, yeah. Well, and
I've never read that book.
I haven't either, but I've heard of it.
It's still on my pile, but I didn't dislike... At that point, I was getting stressed that, you know, I've been on target. I read 6 books a month every month in 2018 for a total of 72 books.
Do you read every word or do you skip? I mean, seriously, because I learned to skip.
Yep. No, I learned how to speed read in high school. Oh, so there is some speed reading involved. But if it's a really good book that captures your attention, I mean, it's not uncommon for me to finish a book in a day.
I literally don't know what that is like.
I don't either.
I don't think I... Well, you read.
Oh, yeah, but if I finish a magazine article in a day, I alert the media. A book a day sometimes?
If it's a really good book.
How do you watch 4 hours of television?
Sometimes
how do you check your
background noise? And actually, most of my reading...
Maybe she's not working too hard here.
Yeah.
Most of my reading is done on the train, on my commute in and out of work.
What was your favorite book of the year?
My favorite non-fiction book of the year was Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine.
My wife
Gail
loved
Honeyman. It.
It
was phenomenal. I hope they don't ruin it when they turn it into a film. Because I think most
What did you make of Becoming?
Loved that. You know, it really...
The Michelle Obama book.
It took me by surprise, honestly. I was expecting greatness from it, and then it almost kind of transformed into like a reveal of more than I hoped for.
It wasn't a reckoning of politics.
No.
It wasn't even about her husband's job.
The words I used to describe it were, I thought it was filled with grace and honesty.
Hmm. That's Sarah Thiemann, who, if folks want to follow your list on Facebook, can they do that?
Yep. I posted it to my Facebook page yesterday.
Okay.
I have a book for you. Inappropriation. It's a novel. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's by Lexi Freeman.
Okay.
Come back on and tell me how much you hated it.
No, you know, I really appreciate recommendations because I have a list. I keep a list on my phone. Some of my friends have been bugging me to get on Goodreads, but I find that some people are a bit harsh with their criticisms of books.
You know,
everyone's
there.
A critic.
Yeah.
So I've still withheld and I keep everything on a list on my phone.
Time's up. Okay, so that's Sarah Thiemann. How do they follow you on Facebook, Sarah?
S Thiemann.
T-I-E-M-A-N.
Yep.
One N on that.
Yep.
S-Thiemann. S-T-I-E-M-A-N.
Yep, like Ty plus man.
On Facebook.
Now nobody's going to watch my show. They're just going to read.
Thank you, Sarah. We're out of time. So watch Mark Baser's show
Don't pick up a book.
On Channel 11.
No, next Thursday.
Next Thursday?
Yeah, we.
What are you doing here today?
I made a mistake.
Okay. Next Thursday on Channel 11 at 10 and Sunday nights at 10:30. And check them out at The Hideout this Friday night.
Yeah, that's
7
true.
7 o'clock?
6:30.
You sure about 6? That?
Yeah.
Get there at 6, buy your ticket, have a beer. It's a very good time. It's nice to see you, Mark Baser.
Thank you, John.
By the way, a couple of other notes from Sarah's list, and the latest on the Ed Burke story. The stories that matter in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Have you heard about this? You will.